Ayin Amid Beis. 7B3. I'm just seeing something. This. Yeah. So in the other ones is 14. Should be. Yeah, 14. Okay, we're just going to start again. We're starting with this very easy Gemara. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines in the bottom. Basically, Gemara said a statement before that it's up to the Kohen to decide if somebody has leprosy, doesn't have leprosy, right, and so on. So the Gemara says, "Lemeimer the Kohen tal yemilsa." Should we say that it's up to the Kohen to decide if somebody has leprosy or not? So the Gemara says, "In this we learned already, just the beginning of it. In yes, why? Vatanya, because we learned. It says in the pasuk, could be in the day the Kohen will see the leprosy that it should become tamei. So it says." The fact that the Torah says on the day that he sees it, meaning there's days he could see the leprosy, there's days he doesn't see the leprosy. Mikan Amru from Hira Chachamim said, like we just quoted before in the Gemara, Chasin Shenelet by Naga, a Chasin, after he gets married, for the first 7 days he gets Saras, Nathan Le Shivas Himei Amishta, you give him 7 days that the Kohen doesn't look at it. Whether it's him or his house, if it has leprosy, or his garment that has leprosy. The same thing on Yom Tif. We give him the 7 days at Yom Tif that he shouldn't be leprosy. Okay? So the Gemara basically says this is Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, we learn out from the Pasuk, and we're going to see, the Gemara is going to ask what's the difference between the two opinions. Basically, Rabbi Yehuda says, Zayin Amid Beis, page 14, 6 lines in the bottom. The Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Torah says there are days that he looks at it, the days he doesn't look at it, which the Torah teaches us certain times we give the guy off. A guy just get married, we don't want to ruin him that he has leprosy right away. Yom Tif, we want a guy to be happy on Yom Tif, we don't give him leprosy right away. Rabbi Eimer, Rabbi says you don't need this pasuk. We can learn out from a different pasuk. It says that it says in the pasuk, "Vitziva kainu pina sabayis." When a guy thinks he has leprosy in his house, so he comes to the kohen and he says, "I think I have leprosy in my house." So the pasuk says the first thing the kohen does, it says, "Empty out the house, everything out of the house
before he gets there."
Because once he gets there and he makes it tamei, then everything in the house is tamei, right? So what does the Torah basically say? The kohen has the right to make it tamei or not, because the question is, the kohen comes to the house and it's tamei, yeah? That means everything in the house should have become tamei. Right? The fact is it was tamei. Do we say no? The Torah says, the kohen empties out the house, then he comes and proclaims that the house is tamei. So what do you see from here? If you can postpone the kohen's decision of leprosy for gashmiyistika things, for optional things, kol shekhen l'dvar mitzvah, certainly when there's a Yom Tov involved, or there's a Chasen involved, for sure the Kohen has the discretion to say Tamei or not. Okay, so there's two opinions, this is where we left off. There's two opinions in the Gemara, how do we learn out, in other words, the Gemara is not arguing the fact. Everybody says, a Kohen has a right to make a Chasen not Tamei, or a Yom Tov not Tamei. I mean, the guy on Yom Tov not to become Tamei. The only question is, where do we learn it out from? The first opinion, Rabbi Yehuda learns it out from a pasuk. It says, the day he sees, which means there's a day that you don't see. And the Rabbi says, no, you learn it out from the house. So the Gemara says, my binayu, what's the difference between the two opinions? Like, who cares where you learn out from? It's the same din. So Abaye says, you're right. Mashmar is dar shenika binayu. The only difference is where we learn it out from. Otherwise, it's taka no difference. Meaning, they both agree, a kohen has a right, whether it's a mitzvah, or divrei reshus, the kohen has a right not to make something leprosy. It's completely up to the kohen. Rava Amar, Rava says no. Divad harashus ika beinayu. The difference is optional on a person's body. In other words, it says like this. The first pasuk says, is speaking about, there's three leprosies. There's leprosy on a body, there's leprosy on your clothing, and there's leprosy on your house. The pasuk, the first pasuk that the Gemara quoted, that on the day you look at it will become tamei, is speaking about your body. tumma, leprosy of the body. The other pasuk is speaking about the house. That if there's leprosy in the house, the kohen says, empty out the house, and then the kohen comes and says, is tamei. Okay? Now, what's the difference between the two? So, Abaye says there's no difference. Everybody agrees the same thing. Whether it's house, whether it's monetary, whether it's body, yom tov, it doesn't matter. The kohen has the discretion to say tamei or not. Rav says no. When it comes to the body, leprosy of the body, it's only a mitzvah that makes it a break it. That's what the first opinion says. He says, B'yayim heroz b'y basar chai, yitma, the day the kohen sees the leprosy, it's tamei. When can he not look? If it's a chosen, or yomtiv, which both are mitzvahs. How about, for optional purposes, can a kohen say, on a body it's not tamei? He can't. That a kohen can do.
What's optional?
Monetary things.
On the boat?
No, for whatever. The guy wants to go on vacation.
Right.
The guy wants to go on vacation. Can a kohen say, no, you're not tamei? You come back, we'll look at it. So according to this first opinion of the Braisa, you can't. Because it's only chosen or how about vacations? No. By the house, it's not a mitzvah, and the guy says, empty out the house. That's a house, not a person. In other words, according to Rava, there is a difference between the two opinions halachically. And the body, can you not look at it for vacation? By a house, the Torah says, you clearly wait. You empty out the house, and then you come and say, Tommy. Can you do that by the body? The second opinion of it says no. And he says, he says, Rebbe says, Tzaras on the body is the same as a house, the second opinion. Therefore, just like it's completely up to the kohen by a house, it's completely up to the kohen by a body, whether it's a mitzvah or not. And the other opinion says no. And the Gemara explains why. Rabbi Yehuda, mehasim legamrinin. You can't learn out body from a house. Rebbe learns that just like by the house, the kohen has the option to say tummy or not, the same thing is by a body. Rebbe says you can't learn out house and body from house. Why? The chiddushu, because the whole concept of a house becoming tummy is a non-existent entity. We never find anywhere a house is tummy. I'll give you an example. Even a dead body in a house, yeah? You take the body out of the house, that's it. The house is not tamei anymore. Right? So the concept that a house is tamei is bechlal not a normal din. It's a chiddush. You can't learn out body tumah, which is common, from something which is uncommon, which is tumah of a house. And he says why? He says, because normal wooden stones, meaning what a house is made out of, never becomes tamei. Yet, v'hocha by leprosy, mitamid becomes tamei. So Rebbe says you can't learn out body from house. House is a chiddush. I mean Rebbe Yehuda, not Rebbe. Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe says you do learn it out. Okay? Now, the Gemara is going to clarify Rebbe's opinion. Why can't Rebbe, who learns it out from a house, why can't he learn it out from Rebbe Yehuda's pasuk? The Torah says, sometimes you look, sometimes you don't look. So he says, Rabbi Amar, because it's not an extra pasuk. He says, why? The ikos of Rachmana b'yem hera'ois, if the Torah only said, on the day that you see the flesh, it's tamei, hav amina l'dvar mitzvah ein. I would have only permitted it for a dvar mitzvah. Only for a mitzvah, like chos and yomtev. But I would think for optional things not. So therefore, there's the second pasuk of the houses. So the Torah says, even by houses, it could be the same thing. And he learns a body from houses the same way. And he says, I let it only say the din of houses, that it's up to the kohen, and by a body we won't need the Torah to tell it. We can learn out body from houses. He said, no, Why? Because if Rachmana v'tziva kain, if the Torah only said v'tziva kain, hava, I mean, I would think hani in only by a house you can delay it. Why? The laf tumah de gufei, because the objects in the house are not tummy themselves. It becomes tummy from the house, but tumah de gufei, tumah of the body. I mean, it's not the tumah of the body. It's only a tumah of a house, but tumah of a guf. That if you see it, then he has to be tamei. Tzrich, we need both cases. Meaning like this. According to the Rebbe, we learn it out from two psukim. One is the body, meaning sometimes he looks, sometimes he doesn't look. But that's not enough. Why? Because that pasuk could only teach me for a mitzvah, you can delay it. How do I know for divrei rishus, for optional things you could delay it? You learn it out from the house. I let it only say house. I would think, no, house is different because it's not on the body. But maybe the body is stricter. So according to Rebbe, it's interesting. If a guy wants to go on vacation, let's say. I mean, according to Rebbe, it's not Daloch, I don't think it's like Rebbe. But if a guy wants to go on vacation and he has tzaras on his body, and the kohen, according to Rebbe, has an option to say, I'm not looking at it yet. After the vacation, I'll look at it. You'd have that option to say. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you can't look at it. It's only for a mitzvah.
What happens if nobody declares him tummy? Let's say he's in a place where...
He's not tummy.
In a place where he can't...
Not tummy. It's not tummy. Until a kohen says tummy, you're not tummy.
Somebody wants to go to vacation. Why he has to come to the kohen?
What happens if the kohen happened to look at him? No, according to Rabbi, even if the kohen looks at him, he doesn't have to say. He could just... the only one that... Not only that, even if the guy is a Talmud Chacham, and he knows all the laws of leprosy, and he looks at his hand, and he knows that there's no question that this is leprosy... Until a kohen says tamei, he's not tamei.
What if the leprosy is in the kohen itself?
Another kohen has to look.
He himself cannot.
No. It says in the there's a mishnah. It says, "Kol negoyim adam reya chutz mi negoy atzmei." It's used in Musar in ethics. They say you see everybody's plagues except your own. Everybody else's faults you see except your own. But the Gemara is really the halacha that you could see everybody's okay, and could see everybody's leprosy except his own. There's an interesting explanation that Rebbe explains why dafka kohen. If it's saras, it's saras. I mean, if the guy's a Talmud Chacham, even the Rashi says in Chumash, even if it's a Talmud Chacham, he has to come to the Kohen and say, Kinnega nilali babois. And like we learned, what happens if the Kohen's an Amoritz? Not every Kohen was a scholar. The Kohen's an Amoritz. So what does the Kohen do? He calls in the scholar. He asks the scholar, leprosy or not, the Chacham looks, and the Kohen pronounces the sentence. So why can't the Chacham do it already? The answer is because the only one that has the right to excommunicate the Jew, which to us is excommunication, is only a kohen who is isha chesed. Havei mitamid of shalar, eiv shalom, reid of shalom, eiv of sabrius. The only one who has a right to proclaim excommunication on a Jew, you have to be a Jew lover. Nobody else could do it.
So if a kohen sees somebody with leprosy, he's obligated to pronounce him yes or no? Or I have to be approached and invited to look at it, even if it's not, in other words,
once the Torah teaches us that sometimes on a body you could postpone it for a mitzvah, on the body for a mitzvah you could postpone it, from the house we learn it doesn't have to be a mitzvah, it could be anything. Even though the house is a chiddush. But once we know that for a mitzvah you could postpone it on the body. So the house teaches us already that you could postpone even that for a mitzvah. Okay, now the Gemara says, Amamad, we just got through saying in the Pasuk, that we learn after the Pasuk, B'yem heroz bay, the day the Kohen sees, there's a day he could see, there's a day he doesn't have to see. So he says, Yeshem shatereya bay, there's a day that he could see the leprosy, V'yeshem shiatereya bay, and there's a day that you don't see the leprosy. So the Gemara says, my mashma, how do you learn it out from that Pasuk? The Torah says, on the day he sees it, but how do you know there's a day that you don't have to see? Amr Abaye says, Im Kain, Lichtev Rachmana B'yayim. The Torah it's U'B'yayim, with an extra Vav. So Abaye says, the Torah could have said the word B'yayim. The Torah adds an extra Vav, U'B'yayim. So the extra Vav is extra, teaches us so you can have a day. Shema Mina, Yashem Shatarei Abayit, there's a day you could see. Yashem Shatarei Abayit, there's a day you cannot see. Rava Amar, Rava says even more. The whole pasuk is extra. It's not only the vav. He says, Kula kra yiseru, the whole pasuk is extra. Dimkein, lichtev rachmana beherois. The Torah doesn't mean the whole pasuk. He said the whole word b'yayim is extra. Abaye says only the vav is extra. Rava says the whole word b'yayim is extra. The Torah could say, hu beherois, by hanagar. Why does it say b'yayim? Shema Mina teaches us even more. B'yayim, Rava says, teaches us there's a day you see, and there's a day you don't see, meaning if it's a mitzvah or whatever, you don't have to look at the leprosy. So now the Gemara asks, Abaye learns it out from extra vav. That means the word itself is not extra. B'yayim is not extra, according to Abaye. So Gemara says, Abaye, what does Abaye do with the word? He says, Ahumi b'yayim b'yayim v'lay b'layla. This is another interesting din. B'yayim teaches us, B'yayim is not extra. B'yayim teaches us that Kohen is not allowed to see leprosy at night. It could only be B'yayim. So therefore, B'yayim is not extra. What's extra? Only the Vav. So the Vav teaches us some days you could see, some days you don't have to see. But the word B'yayim, Abaye says we need. Because you need to know that you can only look at leprosy during the day and not at night. So the question is, Rava, but Rava said the whole word is extra. So how does Rava know you can only look at leprosy by day, not at night? He said, "Bayem v'le'balayla minole." Where does he learn it out from? Nafkale. He learns out from a different pasuk, because the pasuk says, "L'chol mare eini akain." Whatever the kain is able to see. And by night, you can't see. It's an interesting shaila, by the way, in Halacha. I mean, it doesn't apply today, there's no saras today. But does a Kohen have to see it with his own eyes? Or can he wear glasses?
His own eyes.
No, I'm saying, it says, Chomare Einei HaKohen. Can you look at it with glasses, or he has to look at it without glasses?
You don't know whether the scholar can see it, I'll tell him. If scholar can see it, then...
I understand, but when you look at it, do you have to look at it without glasses? You couldn't even look at a magnifying glass.
And you can't see without glasses.
Huh? We're going to learn. One minute. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. Vabaya. So what does Abaye do with that pasuk? Chomarei Einei HaKohen. He says it teaches us the mutei sumah b'achas me'enav. It says, Marei Einei HaKohen. It has to be visual to the eyes of a Kohen. What happens if a Kohen is blind in one eye? Abaye says he's not allowed to look at leprosy.
What if he has bad vision? Like, his eyes can't see.
If he's blind?
Not blind.
Okay, then he could see. But Abaye is saying two things. B'yayim teaches us you have to look at during the day, not at night. There's another part of L'chol Marei Einei HaKohen. The Torah teaches us it needs to be eyes, Einei HaKohen. If he's blind in one eye, he can't look.
Could we say that B'yayim, like, if he happened to see one day, that means he doesn't have to volunteer?
No. But the Torah says you have to see B'yayim. There's not only the, by the way, there's a lot of psukim that the Torah says the word B'yayim. Like a bris he can't do at night. Because it says B'yayim Hashmini. So the Torah says B'yayim, it means day, not at night.
What language Torah would use if it meant day and night?
It would just say... No, beherdos by, or beherdos by tzaras yitma.
Somewhere else we learn.
He wouldn't say yom.
He wouldn't use the word yom at all.
Kol yom echayav.
Kolimecher day, right? Right, day and night, yeah. How do you know tzitzis you don't wear at night? Because says Uriisa may say. And at night you don't see. They say you learn out tzitzis. You can only make a bracha during the day, not at night. But the Gemara says, so now the question, what does Rava do? Because Rava is using this psukim for different things. So he says, Mi boile lahacha. So the Gemara asks, according to Rava, you needed to exclude a blind person. So how could you learn out other things? He says, Enochanami, you're right. But, how does he know that you can only look at it by day and by night? He learns it out from Kenega Nirali Babayas. It says like this, Kenega Nirali Babayas. When it comes to the house, the pasuk says, what does the Kohen have to say? It appears to me leprosy. Why doesn't he just say Kenega Nirali Babayas? What does Li mean? Li means Li Veloila Eidi. It has to be by myself, not by my light. Meaning, no additional lights, no candles. It has to be me by myself, meaning during the day. So the Gemara says, Vabai, okay, so Vabai again, what does he do again with that pasuk? He says, Imi hasim hava mina ani mili tuma delav de gufe. I would think only it refers to tuma, not in the body. Avo tuma de gufa. But tum of the body. I would think that you can even do it with somebody else's light. Kamash Milan, it teaches us no. Basically, both opinions, Abaya and Rava, basically are agreeing in Halacha. They're only learning out different things in different psukim. But everybody agrees, if you're blind in one eye, you can't look at leprosy. Everybody agrees, you have to look at leprosy during the day. Everybody agrees, B'yom, you know, whether it's the B'vav extra, the B'yom extra, they're not arguing in Halacha. They're basically arguing just where you learn things out from. But the bottom line is, you have to look at leprosy during the day. You have to look at leprosy with your own light, not with candlelight. You have to look at, if you're blind in one eye, you can't look at leprosy, and so on and so forth. Okay? That was the first Mishnah. Now the Gemara starts another Mishnah. The first Mishnah was about seeing the Goyim and Yom Tif. Okay? So the Rebbeir said, Lahakav le Lahachmir, and the other opinion says, Lahachmir. Now the Gemara says another thing about Chol HaMoed. That there's a din, Ve'edam Rameir. Rameir before was lenient about leprosy and Yom Tif. You can only look to be... There's a din, let me just give an introduction to this mission. There's a din called Likut Atzamas, reburying a person. Now, according to Halacha, once a person is buried, you're not allowed to move them. There's a few exceptions to the rule. If somebody is buried on a condition that they should be in, like some people want to be buried eventually in Eretz Yisrael, so now they're buried, let's say, chutz la'aretz for a while with the condition, and the condition they made, so then you can move it. Or for somebody to be moved to a family plot. In other words, if they're not, or Lamosha is another case, if the graves are going to be just like in, you know, Europe, the goyim were desecrating the graves, making roads there, or the graves would be ruined by water, floods, or whatever. So then, these are a few exceptions when you're allowed to move the person. But in order to move a dead body, you need a few halacha conditions. Number one, the body already had to decompose, that there's no flesh. You know, you can't do it for a while. Okay? Until the body decomposed completely. Secondly, the day they moved it, to move the body, the family has to tear kriya, and they sit shiva for the day. Even today, I mean, if it's done, that's the halacha today. Obviously, again, if somebody's buried in a goyish cemetery, you're allowed to move it. There's a few exceptions. But basically, you move somebody out of the grave, parenthetically, the grave that they moved them out of cannot be used for any other dead body. You have to leave it empty, and so on and so forth. Now the shaila is, can somebody do this on Chol HaMoed? Because by doing it, you're causing avelus. Number one, the person's sad. Plus, there's a din of avelus. So, are you allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed? So, Veida Mir HaMeir, the mayor says like this: Malakit Odom Atzmis Oveviimi. You're allowed to do move on Yom Tov again in the permissible reasons for moving it. You can gather the bones of his father and mother and reinter them on Chol HaMoed. Why? Because for him, it's a simcha. Why? Because now he feels good that his parents are buried in the family plot, so to speak. Rabbi Yisi Eimer, Rabbi Yisi, what are you talking about? Avil Hulay. You're not allowed to do it during Chol HaMoed because it's Avelus. And the country, the guy's going to feel bad. You know, he's going to be upset. Now, they bring down at the bottom, and this is well known even in Eretz Yisrael, they do it today. In Eretz Yisrael, they don't even bury it. Contrary to American belief, the quicker the body decomposes, the better it is for the guf.
For the neshama,
for every, whatever, it's better. In Eretz Yisrael, even today, they don't bury in coffins. They take out in a stretch. Yeah, everybody buries in shrouds. I'm saying, they take out and they bury, even in New York, they take you out of the coffin, they bury you in the ground, and they cover with the coffin, whatever. But because, why is that? Because the body decomposes quicker. That's why, for instance, we know in Halacha, you can't use a metal coffin. Because metal doesn't allow the body to keep decompose, and it's forbidden. Because the body is supposed to decompose. Offer atov or offer toshu, it's supposed to decompose. So, in Eretz Yisrael, he just says, Yishalmi says that it was customary to bury there without coffins, that the flesh would decompose quicker, and so on and so forth. Okay. Then the Mishnah continues, says, Le'yir'eir or the Malmeisei, a person cannot inspire to have eulogies for the dead. And for his Yomtif, I'll explain what the Mishnah explains. V'lei yaspidenu. You're not allowed to eulogize the person, Kedem l'regu shleishim yeim, 30 days before Yomtif. Meaning, if a guy just died, within 30 days of Yom Tov, we're not talking about by the burial, within 30 days of Yom Tov, you can't hire a guy to eulogize the person. Because it makes you sad on Yom Tov.
If you're doing it 30 days before, how does it make you sad on Yom Tov?
Because, well, the Gemara is going to explain why 30 days, because of a story that happened. But the Gemara says, number one, we're afraid you're going to use up the money, you're not going to be able to go up to the base of Mikdash for Yom Tov. As the Gemara tells the story, that's what happened. But otherwise, the Stam and Inyan, you can't do things 30 days before Yom Tov. We know that when you start learning the laws of the Yom Tov, you know, Shleishim Yom Kedem Machag, you have to learn the halachas already. So the atmosphere of Yom Tov begins already 30 days before. So therefore, Halacha says you can't hire people to do eulogies for a dead relative, meaning to go around. What they used to do is, like Rashi says, a guy who died a month or two ago, they would hire people to go around to all the relatives to make him cry. And people like to cry in those days, I guess. I don't know. They would hire people to go and make people cry. That's what they used to do. So the Gemara asks, Avermin, I'll ask you a question. How could the Mishnah say that the Meir holds you allowed to, you know, do this in Chol HaMoed? It says in the Braisa, Amalakit Atzmasav V'imei, if a person gathers the bones of his parents to remove them, you know, to move them to a new place, Hadezim Misabel Aleim Kolayim. He's an Ovel a whole day. Ola Erev Ein Misabel Aleim, and at night you don't have to. Okay? Now he says like this, biblically, and this is an interesting thing with Avelis, by the way, you bring down at the bottom, Avelis, you know, you sit Shiva 7 days. Are those 7 days rabbinic or biblical? So there are Rishonim that hold, first day is biblical, and all the other days are rabbinic. 6 days are rabbinic. Other opinions say, all 7 days are rabbinic. But over here, the Chachamim is not biblical because they're buried already. Now you're just moving the grave, you know, moving the bones. So the Chachamim came along and said a rabbinic mourning for the day.
You said that.
Why only one day? Because the Chum said, even the original time biblical is one day. So now that you're moving the bones, we're going to keep it, you know, the biblical thing of one day. What?
Because doing Shiva is a rabbinical thing?
Some people say, no, only for that day. The Rambam says, by the way.
Shouldn't biblical be 7 days? Because people...
No.
Israel waited for Miriam for 7 days?
She had leprosy. That was leprosy.
Well, after she died?
Nobody waited 7 days after she died.
Didn't travel?
No.
And 30 days of mourning for Moshe Rabbeinu or something?
That's all rabbinic.
That wasn't a Torah?
It mentions that they... By Yaakov, you know, they mourned 70 days, but it was all not the obligation, it was a fact. That they mourned, but there's no obligation of more than a day biblical. Now, so the Gemara's question is like this: it says, "A malakid atmosavi mades and misalem kolay yain ule erev a misabel aleim in the evening you don't do avelus." The Amid of Chisra says, "Afilu tsrudin beile besedinai even we can mourn even if the bones are wrapped in one sheet," meaning he didn't even reinter the bones yet. Okay? You only keep it one day. In other words, he says, even if you took the bones out of the grave and they're still wrapped, you didn't rebury them yet, it's only one day. What do you see from this? The Gemara asks. Bottom line is, it's Avelis. So how could a mayor say on Yom Tov you could do Avelis? There's no Avelis on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, Emo, no, not because it's Avelis. But what Rameir means is shesimchas haregel olav, that because of the joy of the Yom Tov, he's not going to feel the pain of his avelus. See, simply learning the Mishnah, Rameir says, if you move your parents' bones, simcha hilai. It's a simcha. So Gemara says, what do you mean it's a simcha? You have a din of avelus. How could it be simcha? So the Gemara says, Rameir doesn't mean it's a simcha because there is avelus. What the Meir means, though, the simcha of Yom Tov outweighs the avelus of moving the bones. And therefore the Meir holds you allowed. That's how the Gemara answers. Okay, now... Now the Gemara says, also it says in the mission of Le'yarid, you're not allowed to inspire mourning for the person who died. So the Gemara says, what does it mean you shouldn't do it? What are you not allowed to do? Amar Rav, Rav said it means like this. In Eretz Yisrael, the eulogizers, they had paid eulogizers that made people cry. He would walk around and say, "Yifkun aime kol merira liba," weep with him all those that are broken hearted. Meaning they would call everybody to start crying. So Gemara says you can't do that 30 days before Yom Tov. Why? Because you want to go have simcha. You don't want to have crying for Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, "Mashna shleishim yom." Why up is 30 days? So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yud, Amar Rav Kana, Amar Rav Yud, Amar Rav." There was a stack of story. There was a story with a person. He saved money to go up to Yerushalayim for Yom Tov because he has an obligation to go to Yerushalayim. And this eulogist guy came and started eulogizing. What happened? His wife took the money that the husband saved to go up to Yom Tov. She gave it to the eulogizer. What happened? By the way, he doesn't say he killed his wife. He just didn't go up to be Eila Regal. So because of that, the Gemara says, because of this, Chum say 30 days before Yom Tov, you're not allowed to. Why? We're afraid you're going to spend money on the eulogizer, whatever the word is, eulogist, and you'll end up not going up to Yom Tov. One second, that's Rav's opinion. Shmuel Omar? Shmuel says no. Lefi she'ein ha-meis mishtakech min alef shloshim yim. A person doesn't forget about a dead person for 30 days. Meaning like this. If you eulogize him within 30 days, people are going to remember it for 30 days. That means on Yom Tov they're going to be mourning over the eulogy that you said, and it's going to disturb the Yom Tov. So Gemara says, my bina, what's the difference of the two opinions? Either it's because you're not going to have any money, or because you're going to be sad on Yom Tov. So Gemara says, very simple. Ika bina, David bechinim, if he does it for free. If the eulogizer doesn't take money. So if the reason is you won't have money to go up to Yerushalayim, it doesn't matter. The guy's not taking any money anyway. But according to Shmuel's reason, that you're going to be sad on Yom Tov, that applies regardless. And if it applies regardless, then you couldn't do it.
Okay, this means that if somebody dies within 10 days, they don't eulogize on them?
No, that you have to, because there's a mitzvah to eulogize. On Yom Tov, you can't.
No.
But here we're talking about the guy died already. You're creating a new eulogy. And as you're doing a new eulogy, the guy died already a month ago. Today you want to come within 30 days and make a new eulogy. So what are you doing? You're making people cry 30 days into Yom Tov. That you can't do.
We're talking about an optional
eulogy? Yeah.
Just an option.
Yeah.
Oh. But if somebody dies within 30 days, then it's okay.
Yes. But Tesis has an interesting thing. Tesis, and the top Tesis says, the halacha is like Rav, be'isir, which means that if you do it for free, you're allowed to. And Taisa says even more, even according to Shmuel, it's only forbidden to make this eulogy through a professional eulogizer. But for the person himself, Taisa says a very interesting concept. Abuhu atzmi shari. Why? Because when you cry, you get the load off your mind, and then you become happy quicker. So Taisa says, when somebody else does the crying, you stay sadder longer than if you do it yourself. So Taisa says, even according to Shmuel, that says it's going to make you sad on Yom Tov, and therefore even if they do it for free, you're not allowed to. Taisa says, according to Shmuel, if you do it yourself, the eulogy, you would be allowed to.
Get it off the chest.
Taisa's an interesting expression. Aidei tzaka. And then after a short period of time, we'll be happy.
I guess they weren't Chabadniks. Chabad doesn't eulogize.
In the olden times, they used to eulogize.
I mean, it seems from the Gemara that Chachamim was approved of this custom.
Of eulogy.
Right.
Yeah, the reason that was in the time of the Gemara, yeah. There's halachas. In the obligation of a husband to a wife, by the way, that if she dies, he has to bury her, and he has to have the eulogizers, he has to get the whole thing in halacha. And the Torah talks, in the halacha talks, when you could make eulogies, like Chanukah you can't, and Rosh Chodesh you can't, and Chol HaMoed you can't, I mean, all these dinim. But in many of the Hasidic world, some do, some don't. They don't do eulogies. Why? Why don't they do eulogies? First of all, what they say for a joke, so to speak, that if the nifter, if the guy is in the coffin, would be able to talk, they would get up in the middle of speech and say, shut up already, let me just be buried. You know, don't hack a chinik. You're talking, let me just be buried already. But it says another thing. It says, in this brought down in Halacha, that when you make a eulogy, people don't know this, and they do things, and it's mamish detrimental, opposite of what they want to accomplish. It says in Halacha, if you eulogize a person at a funeral more than the person really was, it's very detrimental, it's very bad for the dead, for the nifter. Because then in Beis Din, Shalmaila, when they're being judged, let's say by the eulogy, say, oh, such a great person, da 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 da, and he wasn't what they say he was. So Bez and Shalmaila holds it against the nifter that you fooled people to think things that you're not. And they hold, it says in Svam, they hold it against you. Therefore, even in Halach and Shchonot, in Poskim, they talk that when you eulogize somebody, you have to make sure that whatever you say is true, not to be megazim, not to exaggerate, because if you do, you're making bigger problems to the nifter. You want to eulogize them out of their respect, and you end up ruining it. And that's what's on the halacha. So many circles, This is one of the reasons it's brought down in many circles. They don't make any eulogies. It's better no eulogy than to overdo it to make it worse for the person. So that's but then one of the reasons. Yeah, but in the Gemara talks about eulogies and the, yeah, of course.
Probably knew how to do it back then.
That's what I'm saying, they knew how to do it. I'll give you another example in Halacha where this doesn't work. Moshe Chabad has a custom, we don't add aliyas. We don't make a hisafis. 7 aliyas in Shabbos and that's it. The Mishnah Megillah says you can Shabbos, you can be Mesev aliyas. But you go against a mission. The Mishnah says you can add aliyas. So what do you mean this custom is not to add aliyas? But there's a truth in the Tzemach Tzedek, and to show the way things are different. It says, the Tzemach Tzedek explains, that when the Mishnah says you can add aliyas, it's speaking in the olden times. Why? In the olden times, it didn't have a Balkari. You got called up to the aliyah, you read your aliyah. Everybody knew how to read, yeah? So he called up somebody to the Torah. The guy didn't, there was no Balkari reading the Torah. You got the Aliyah. You made the Bracha before and after. You read it. And that was fine. So then you can add as many Aliyahs as you want. But nowadays, the guy that makes the Bracha doesn't read. The Balkari reads. So Tzemach Tzedek proves in Halacha that you're not allowed to add. So you know, things changed. And because of things that changed, the halacha changes.
Back then you could have like 50 aliyahs?
Yeah.
In one reading?
If you don't get stoned, yeah. No, just on Shabbos. Yom Tov, if you can't add.
How did they divide it?
Well, you have to know how. I mean, you need at least 3 psukim, and it has to be not 3 psukim with 2 psukim left until the end of a paragraph. I mean, you can't just break it in the middle. You have to, you know, they're halachas. How you could break it, where you could break it, you know, when. But I'm saying, according to Allah, you could break down, if you have a long parsha, like this parsha, Nasi, 176 psukim. You know how many aliyahs you can get from this 176 psukim? You could probably get 100 aliyahs. No, you can't, you need 3 psukim. But I'm saying, you can get 50 aliyahs you could probably get.
But didn't you say they instituted repetition of Tamil Esther because people were illiterate?
Yeah.
Those days, it was after? Or?
In those days, those people didn't get called to the Torah. They taka didn't get called. And there was also another difference. Torah reading, they read it inside. Okay, so there are no vowels, but they knew how to read it. Shemoneh Esrei was by heart, they had no sidurim. That was harder, davening by heart, for many people, than to look in a chumash and read correctly. It's all different. So if they taka didn't know how to read, they taka didn't get an aliyah. But if they know how to read, they taka got.
But whereas just aliyah, he must read by himself.
That's where the halacha is today. When you get an aliyah, you have to read quietly with the Balkari. Because really, you're supposed to be reading it. Right. So you have to, unless you're in parts of davening where you're not allowed to talk, so then you can't. Like in Birchas Krishma,
no.
You know, from Yishtabach to Shmanasi, that's why they're not supposed to call you. Because you can't read along. But if they call you, you go up, because they called you. But you don't read.
Huh?
Can't
say the Baruch.
You say the Baruch before and after, but you don't read. Between Baruch Shem and Yishtabach, you can get called and you could read. But between... So, you know, there's a lot of... thing with you, allowed to do, not allowed to do. Okay, let's start the next mission at least. Now, next mission discusses about digging graves in Chol HaMoed. And we'll see in the mission and in the Gemara, are we talking about there's a dead body here that needs the grave, or stamazet to dig a grave, or get graves ready. There's a whole discussion coming up in the Gemara. But they had different types of graves. And the mission effect says, you cannot dig new niches, and we're going to see the Gemara is going to ask what is kuchen. The Gemara is going to explain what a kuchen is, or tombs during Chol HaMoed. Now, the Gemara is going to explain, but the Rashi brings on over here like this: in the time of the Gemara, because they would bury people right away, you know, as soon as possible. In, like we know, in Eretz Yisrael, they make funerals at night too, right? In America, the government doesn't let, but in Eretz Yisrael, you make funerals at night because it's a mitzvah to bury a person as soon as possible. So in the time of the Gemara, they used to have ready-made graves available that if somebody needs it. Nowadays, it's interesting. Nowadays, it's brought down an halacha. You're not supposed to dig a grave until the guy actually dies.
You don't want to make a segula or something.
No. No, by the way, you know what's brought down an halacha? That if you buy a grave for yourself, it's a segula to live long.
Really?
It's brought down. I didn't buy a grave, don't worry. But I'm saying, it's brought down an halacha that it's fun, not an halacha, it's fun. It's brought down that if you buy a grave site for yourself, it's a skula to live long.
Interesting.
I mentioned recently, they say that there was a guy, there was a very big schlemazel in business. Whatever he touched, went down. So they suggested to him, he should open a mortuary. Because then if he opened, nobody's going to ever die. He was such a battle in the business. If he opens a mortuary, nobody's going to die. So it'll be okay. It'll be good for the Jews. But the Gemara is basically discussing, they used to dig graves underground and above ground. In caves. With Marsha Machpelah. They used to dig, the Gemara is going to explain, they used to dig graves in caves, in stones, above ground and below ground. So the Mishnah is saying, you're not allowed to do these new burial niches and Yom Tif and Chol HaMoed. Why? Because it's a lot of work. To dig a new grave, let's push it. Begashmi is a lot of work. But you can adapt, and the Gemara is going to explain what this means. Okay, meaning you can make them bigger or smaller. I mean, to make them a little bit bigger, whatever. You're allowed to make a washing pond during Chol HaMoed. And here also there's two opinions. What does it mean? Does it mean for grave, for to do taharas on a dead body? Or does it mean to wash laundry? It's two opinions about making a washing pond during Chol HaMoed. The Ardin in Memeis Bechotzer, you're allowed to build a coffin, if you needed a coffin, if the mace was in the courtyard together with the, when you build the coffin. Why? We're talking about Chol HaMoed. Why? Because if a guy was just building coffins, they're going to think, what are you building for no reason on Yom Tov? But if the mace is next to the coffin, then they see, obviously, you're building it for a reason. But otherwise, you're not allowed to build a coffin on Yom Tov, on Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Yehuda says, you can't forbid even this, if the dead body is there, elam ken yesh imay nesodim, unless if the boards are already cut. In other words, the boards are already cut for the coffin, so then the Rabbi Yehuda holds, if the mace is there, then you're allowed to. Otherwise not.
I thought you don't put them in coffin.
No, that's what I'm saying. So the Gemara is saying, if they needed a coffin for whatever reason it was,
you had to carry it.
That they carry it to a different city, whatever the reason is, that they needed a coffin, so it says you can't do it. But the Gemara, I mean, we're going to see next time in more detail, but it's speaking about, the only question is, one opinion says it's speaking about a washing pond for laundry. The question with the whole Mishnah is talking about a mace, and middle talk about a washing pond for laundry, I mean, it doesn't, so most Mefarshim learn that it's speaking about, even though Rashi learns it's speaking about washing laundry, because it's not a lot of work. It's not a lot to work to dig the grave. Rashi in the Gemara later explains, why does Rabbi Yehuda hold, if the mace is there, you still can't build a coffin? It's speaking because it's too much work. But, you need to bury the guy. So we'll see later in the Gemara, it's speaking, there's another coffin ready. So you really don't need this coffin. If you need the coffin, you need to bury the guy, of course you can do a Chol HaMoed.
Even if he's not there. Even if the mace is not there.
No, you need the mace there, because people should know that this is what you're building it for.
Wes, I mean, if the person passed away, you got to
shut. One second. When the Mishnah started off, the first dinner of the Mishnah, you can't dig graves. Yeah? It doesn't mean that there's no grave and the guy needs to be buried. You have to push it off into that's not what the Gemara is talking about. The Gemara is talking about, there are other graves. You want to put this grave. So the Mishnah says you can't do it. Okay.